Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall. These bigger than boys are digging it out. I have them like Miley Cyrus, clothes off, twerking in their bras and thongs. Timber. Face down, booty up. Timber. That's the way we like the world. Timber. I'm sicker than an oil spill. She says she won't, but I bet she will. Timber. Swing your
partner. Good evening. One more time here on the Double with the Double S Express. As summer has started and we're still trying to get over a draw in soccer.
Yes. What's up out there? Man, yesterday was probably one of the most nerve-wracking games that you could ever watch. I mean, you talk about going through ups and downs. And, you know, when you talk to certain people, Sean, it's like, hey, you know, we should be elated because, you know, we're still in the chance to get to the final 16 and, you know, we didn't lose, but, you know, I don't care which sport it is, Sean Wally, when you tie, it's just ridiculous. It's like you started from the beginning, and why did we even play the game if you can end in a tie?
Yeah, I've never understood that at all. Exactly right. You start in a tie. Why do you end in a tie? Doesn't matter the sport. Of course, soccer is most famous for it. Hockey as well. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, and I mean, we went through 95 minutes. You know, soccer's a 90-minute contest, with the exception of when there are injuries and stuff like that, then they have extended play. And so there are 5 minutes extended and, you know, really excited about the way things turned around for us. It just seemed like, you know, this was destined, especially in the second half when things just started to roll for us. Of course, in the 64th minute, Jermaine Jones ties it up at one. And, you know, you can feel that momentum shifting, and it was like, man, we're back. Because in the beginning, it felt like, you know, we were just kind of trying to feel our way around, trying to get the ball up the field. And then all of a sudden, in the 81st minute, with Clint Dempsey, our guy, your guy, Seattle Sounders, gets the second goal. We're up 2-1, and it seemed like we were on our way, Sean Wally.
Yeah, he used his abs to get that ball into the net there, did Dempsey, and things were looking great. And then the extra time happened, what, 30, 32 seconds before it was all over. They allowed Ronaldo to make that phenomenal kick, which the kick was amazing. But the horrible part is the defenders weren't watching the Portugal players. They were watching the ball and not reacting to what the other team was doing.
Yeah, there were two players involved, and I can't remember which of our U.S. players were involved in that. But, yeah, they were sitting there watching, you know, instead of being more the aggressor. And that's one of the things that I had a problem with, Sean, is that, you know, even the game prior, you know, once we had the lead, it seemed like we were playing not to lose. And, you know, we get into this situation to where we play this defense and allow teams to just – have shot after shot after shot, and we have one of the best goalies. But I tell you what, you know, when our goalie gets so many shots at him, at one point his guard's going to be let down, and that's what happened, you know, in that particular play. And it was just a travesty. You know, 30 seconds left, like you were saying, it seemed like, you know, victory was in our hands. You know, the country is jumping up and down, and we're like, man, we are going to be the first qualifier, you know, in this whole thing and put ourselves in a great position. And now, Sean, we're looking at, you know, a couple of days rest, and we go up against a daunting task in the group of death. Now we got to go up against Germany. And, man, right now it seems like if we lose, then we go home.
True, but a tie, another draw, or a victory, and we march forward. So you have to hope that having a former German national player and coach and Jurgen Klinsmann as the U.S. coach is the ace up the American sleeve.
Yeah, you know, going back to the this game against Portugal, I mean, what do you think, Sean? I mean, in this situation, you have Ronaldo coming up the field, and, you know, it almost has to be like maybe like a Kobe Bryant or a Michael Jordan coming up the court for the last shot. You know what's going to happen. You know something spectacular is going to happen. Do you foul them? Do you disrupt the play to regroup? I mean, of course, hindsight is 20/20, but to allow Ronaldo to put just an awesome assist together the way he did to set up that final goal with Silvestri Varela to get the score was just amazing. How we had our you know basically our hands in our pockets.
Yeah, it definitely looked like the spectators out there on the field for the American defensemen that were out there, and it was just a travesty for that to happen in the final seconds. And it's too bad that it did. But again, on the plus side, they still have 4 points moving forward with a shot to get to the knockout round. And if you had told everybody that was going to be the plan and that was what was going to happen, anybody on the American team would have taken that hands down.
So where do the Americans go? I mean, we're getting ready to play against Germany. I mean, of course, we have to have our A game because the way Germany's been playing, they've been putting, you know, goals on the board like a pinball machine. And, you know, we are not a score-savvy type of a team. We're a possession team. We're a team that's very tactical in what we do. And the way, you know, the way we played thus far, it seems like the other teams have been the aggressor. They're the ones that have been bringing it to us, and we're just kind of this in this wait and see. If we use that same tactic against Germany, oh, my God, I just shudder to think what the score would be. I mean, 8-2, 8-1. I mean, what are we looking at? What does the U.S. have to do to win this contest?
Well, they're going to have to match the intensity of the Germans, and they're going to have to attack. They're going to have to not sit back on their heels, and they're going to have to make sure that they are taking it to the Germans instead of waiting for the Germans to come to them.
Yeah, so, I mean, America, get ready. I mean, you were talking about being on pins and needles. As we were yesterday, this is going to be a spectacular contest coming up in a couple of days. Of course, the U.S. having less days rest, which might be good, Sean Wally. They only have 3 days rest in contrast to Germany with 4.
Yeah, that, you know, it's going to be a crazy Thursday, you know, especially out here on the West Coast. It's an early morning start, so there might be a lot of people either not very productive at work or taking the morning off and having hopefully a good time watching the World Cup match. And it'll be interesting to see how Jurgen Klinsmann and his U.S. squad attack the Germans.
Yes. And so, you know, outside of that, Sean, with the U.S., I mean, we're doing our part as far as trying to get into the 16. It's been status quo for the other teams. I mean, Mexico taking it to Croatia today, 3-1. And, you know, you also have, I believe, yeah, Brazil took care of business as well. And so, you know, these teams are right now on the mark for qualifying themselves. And so, you know, let's hope the USA does the same thing.
And Sean, what are your thoughts on the world's football, on soccer, and how everybody watches during the World Cup, especially here in the United States? The TV ratings for yesterday's U.S. Portugal game were as high as they were for the NBA conference finals. So it's a big draw in the States, yet the MLS is gaining popularity, but it's still not quite there yet.
Yeah. You know, I hear this from a lot of people, especially from a lot of our friends who are, you know, are from Mexico that are here and, you know, from all around the world because everybody's, you know, donning their country's colors. And, you know, the knock on the United States is, oh, you guys aren't, you know, fanatical fans. You know, you're only fans when it's the World Cup. And, you know, that may be true to an extent, but, you know, not taking anything away from, you know, the other countries, because let's face it, this is life for these other countries. But at the same time, there are so many things in the United States that go on when you're talking about Major League Baseball, you're talking about the NFL, you're talking about the NBA. So, yeah, there is a diversity when, you know, when America comes together. But this time of the year, this time of the year, you know, for World Cup soccer, there is no greater country than the United States as far as rallying around their you know, their team, around their country. And it's just a great thing. It is. It is an awesome thing for the United States. And I believe that soccer will definitely increase with, you know, some of the other leagues, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see after the World Cup is over how that affects the MLS. And when soccer continues, will more fans tune in? Will more fans go to the stadiums? Of course, in Seattle and in Portland, the MLS is rocking, so that's not really an issue. But there are other cities where they would like to see more fans in attendance.
Oh, it'll only make it better, Sean Wally, and here's the reason why. I'm here in Sacramento with Sacramento Republic. This is, you know, a step below the MLS, and we're packing the stadiums with 21,000 plus each time. We've built an arena or building a stadium right now that seats 10,000, which was undercutting. So they're now thinking of rebuilding this. And so soccer is something that's huge, that's taking the nation by storm. And I can guarantee you within the next year or so, Sacramento Republic will be in the MLS. That's how big soccer is in Northern California. That's how big soccer or football, if you will, is growing all around the country.
Yeah, it's definitely good to see how many people are devoted to it, how many different businesses and how many bars have big viewing parties. And it's a lot like it is for playoffs in sports here in the States, because that's what the World Cup is, one giant playoff. And I think that's one of the things that draws people to it, is the playoff type form.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that I have a problem with, what I said at the beginning, is man, when you're in a big grand spectacle like this on a huge stage, and you know, we've got our guest coming up, our first big time guest coming up, and he'll kind of explain to us, you know, some of the European flavor. But when you're talking about football in Europe and you're talking about ties, man, there has to be something done about that, because I cannot stomach another tie, you know, as far as trying to advance to the next level.
Yeah, there's going to be an interesting thing that if the scores in games on Thursday work out so strangely that the U.S. could end up in a coin flip to determine who moves on to the knockout rounds.
Definitely. And let's shift gears here. Let's go to our first guest here on the Double with the Double S Express. We have Daryl Reshaw, executive producer of globalbasketball.com. Daryl, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I was sitting up here listening to you guys talk about the world football stage or world soccer stage. And as you know, I lived in Europe for 20 years. And, you know, as they say over there, football rules. And so it's actually a pretty exciting time just to, you know, watch the different countries. And I was in my office, and my wife is actually from Holland. And their first game, I'm on the off working on the Global Basketball Summer League, and she runs in and she points at the score, and Holland's beaten Spain 4-1. And I'm in the house, and she was, you know, she's a Coca-Cola employee, and she was working from home today, and I see her on a conference call. But then I look at the TV, and Holland's playing again, and she's right there. She's decked out in orange, and I see it was 0-0 at halftime. Then I come back in, and I was like, did they win? She said, yeah, they won 2-0. And I was like, oh, wow. So I remember when they played Spain in the last World Cup, she went to a big Dutch-American function they have here in the greater Atlanta area. And actually, they came back a little disappointed. But, I mean, it's pretty exciting, you know. I mean, football, as they call it on the world stage, it's the game.
Now, Daryl, you've had the opportunity of living over in Europe and spending 20 years there in your professional basketball career. Now, kind of give us an idea on what the difference is, because I was talking earlier about how people look at the United States as this being kind of a faddish thing. I mean, what do you think, you know, as far as our fan base here in the United States, are we as passionate as, you know, some of the other football or soccer programs around the world?
Well, you know, I think if you look at kind of like the Duke Blue Devils, and you go to school at Duke, and you, what they call them, the Dukies, and you go to their the Cameron Indoor Stadium, you see the fans, you know, they may camp out the night before and they paint their stuff and they go crazy, and it's a really tough place to play. I did have the experience go to a couple of European football games and just seeing the fans. And I mean, it is actually kind of next level, you know. I mean, they go to the extreme over there. You know, you grow up in, let's say you grow up in somewhere in London, in South London, and your family has a history of being, let's say, a Crystal Palace supporter. And live, die, whatever, you know, you're going to be a Crystal Palace supporter from the day you're born to the day you die. And, you know, these guys go to the extreme. When I first went over there in the 80s, there was a lot of hooliganism going on in football, the Premier League. And, you know, these guys had organized fighting. You know, one team would have a group of guys. And after the game, and I mean, it was really extreme. And, I mean, I've never seen the level of support. I mean, people would literally fight if you're from a different, you know, where I think in the United States, you know, you do go to football games and you see guys getting some alcohol. And if you're a Raiders fan and the San Francisco playing, you heard some issues. But these guys, they really, you know, their support is almost next level, you know. And even in the basketball games, you know, in certain places I played, like in Israel and Greece and stuff, you know, they literally have to have barriers over the opposing team's bench because, you know, fans, they throw coins. And it could be very intimidating. Like here in the United States, you have an arena, like 18,000-seat arena, and it can have a great atmosphere. But what's intimidating is you're going to a European basketball stadium with only 6,000 fans. But the whole time, the fans are screaming, there's chanting songs, and you can't hear anything. And it's a lot more intimidating than a 20,000-seat arena, you know, and the level, the noise level is just off the roof. So, I mean, it's, you know, support over there is kind of at a different level, to be quite honest. I think, you know, we're the leaders in terms of sports venues, sports marketing, you know, you make it more of a family type of experience. And I actually do enjoy going to pro sports and college sports here in the United States. It's more family oriented. Sometimes it can be quite intimidating at one of those international soccer games.
That's the voice of Daryl Reshaw, executive director at globalbasketball.com. And Daryl, taking you back to when you played college basketball here in the States, how did you go about getting noticed by teams in Europe and deciding to make that trek across the Atlantic?
Oh, man, good question. Man, I ended up playing at, I went to a junior college and I played at FAMU's and State, and I transferred. I don't know if it was the best decision, but I did transfer when I was a leading scorer, leading rebounder from San Diego State. I transferred to a smaller school called Regents College, and I didn't get drafted. And, you know, I knew I really wanted to play pro ball. So upon graduation, I moved out to California, and they have some really good pro-am leagues in the Bay Area. They got the San Francisco Pro-Am, San Francisco Summer League. And I just started playing in the summer league, and all the pros, and California produces a lot of pros, NBA guys and guys who play overseas. And I started playing with the top guys in the area and realized my game was just as good as a lot of the NBA players and a lot of players who are making money overseas. And a guy who's actually a sports agent now was going to law school in San Francisco, and he actually played, and he just said, Daryl, man, you shouldn't be wasting your time playing in these pro-am leagues. Like, man, you got a pro game. You should be playing pro ball, whether it's in the league or overseas. So he introduced me to an agent out of San Francisco, who's an NBA agent. And next thing I know, one thing happened after another. I was playing in the NBA Summer League in LA, and it was just back then it was at Loyola Marymount. I think it was called the Southern California Pro League. Great league. They had NBA teams. They had free agent teams. I think it was really the original NBA Summer League back in the day. This was like in the mid-80s. And went out there and just had opportunity to play against, you know, like the Clippers, Lakers, Pacers, Cavaliers, just a lot of talent, a lot of guys who played overseas. It was an unbelievable experience. Next thing I know, I was on one of the top tour teams over in Europe. Had a chance to play against the Yugoslavian national team, some of the top domestic teams in France, Italy, Spain, and, you know, just had an unbelievable experience, fell in love with Europe. So upon coming back home to the United States after my first tour, actually went back over there through a sponsor and flew into London and actually got hurt in London. So ended up just staying there. And next thing I know, I was playing on the British team. And one thing led to another. I ended up playing in the top league in England for 3 or 4 years. Played on a team that was finishing what they call the EuroLeague now. Back then it was called the Champions Cup, but it was the British only team that ever finished in the Type 8. It was called Kingston, and Cadbury Kingston in 1990. And so we made British history, finishing in the Top 8. We beat actually CSK Moscow, which would never happen now. CSK Moscow is a team that has like a $25 million budget now, and they always finish the top two or three teams in the EuroLeague. And for a British team to beat a CSK Moscow, that would not happen in today's game. But end up staying in Europe for 12 years as a professional player, and another 8 as running a company called Transatlantic Sports Marketing. So, I mean, it was a unique experience, very unbelievable for just an American kid to go over and stay for 20 years and embrace a lot of different cultures, live in a variety of different countries, and learning different cultures, mentality, foods, and, you know, different style of basketball, just a different style of life. And I actually married a girl from Holland, and I ended up getting a European passport. So I guess I spent half my life over there. So I guess I'm half European now.
So you took your experience from your playing days and traveling all over the world and turned that into sports marketing business. Now,
Go ahead.
Now, how did you make that transition, and did you find it easy once you left the game to take all your everything you learned and your talents and put it to work in sports marketing?
Yeah, and I was kind of blessed playing professional basketball in London. My first four jobs were.
Daryl, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Daryl. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, I said I was blessed by playing in London, and I think in between a basketball contract, and one time I actually ran out of money, and I ended up needed to, you know, I was London's like New York City is one of the most expensive cities in the world. So if you're unemployed, you can't stay unemployed too long. So I ended up in between basketball jobs picking up an advertising job with a publishing company. And picked up a unique skill, and I started with them, and I ended up quitting because I got a job in Israel. Went to Israel for a few months, got hurt, had a couple of eye surgeries. And so upon that year, I think I went back to the United States for a few months. Then I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but basketball was off the cards for a second after the injury. So I went back to London and started working for the advertising company. Ended up started out as an advertising salesperson, ended up being the sales director of the company, and I learned a lot about the sales and marketing on the international side, a lot about international advertising. And I guess a couple years later, I decided to transfer those skills in the sports business sector. So I started a company based in London called Transatlantic Sports Marketing, and representing a lot of athletes. And I did have a media client called Eurobasket, and ended up working with them using my advertising background. So ended up writing all their sales and marketing, advertising strategies, and the whole business plan. I worked with them for a 10-year period, and we developed an event called Eurobasket Summer League, and ran that for about 4 years, and then kind of blew up. It became the top event outside the NBA Summer League. And anyway, Eurobasket ended up actually hijacking the event, but it was a blessing. So it gave us the opportunity to purchase a domain called globalbasketball.com. It was actually a domain that we were trying to purchase for Eurobasket because it's a better name. Eurobasket is the leader of providing global basketball information. And everything Eurobasket does is global basketball related. But to have a name Eurobasket from a commercial and an advertising perspective really doesn't make sense. So we purchased Global Basketball, and it's been, about 2 years now. And this is our third summer running the Global Basketball Summer League. And we have plans to take over the market.
Daryl Reshaw, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Daryl, one of the events that you're talking about is coming up here in the second week of July, and that's in Las Vegas, a big European tournament there. Let our listeners know what that entails, what that does for European basketball, and what that might do for the basketball players that are playing in this tournament to get to the next level NBA-wise.
Yeah, the Global Basketball Summer League is a unique platform. You know, it actually provides opportunities for a lot of people. It provides opportunities for agents who want to come and get their clients looks and exposure to the not only to the European market, but the South American marketplace, to the Asian marketplace. We get a lot of teams from Japan, Taiwan, to the domestic market here in the United States. We get a lot of D-League scouts. We get scouts from NBL Canada. And so it's a great tool for agents to come, network, meet coaches from all over the world, for players, players who are not in the NBA mix or looking for exposure. It's a platform for them to play against great competition in a professional format and to test their games in front of all these unique scouts from all over the world. And, you know, we do provide like a little television media platform, and we have the media, the website to provide additional exposure. And the cool thing is we even work with the NBA. It's a platform for them, for their referees. It's a chance for them to work in the summer against real professional talent. So the NBA, they only, their referee and officiating department, they only have three events they do in the summer. And one is the NBA Summer League, obviously. The other is, I think it's the Adidas Top 64. And their other event is Global Basketball. And they really like what we're doing, the format. We have a mini, basically a mini NBA Summer League. And for teams, it's a platform. It's, teams come from all over the world. It's an opportunity for them to come to one location and look at real professional talent. So they get an opportunity to scout, sign. And this year we have a new platform where we have five international teams coming into Las Vegas. They're actually doing just like the NBA. They're having their own summer league team. So these teams, instead of signing guys unseen, they get a chance to work with the American players, you know, over a four-day period in a professional format, professional environment. So, you know, we're really excited about the future of global basketball and where the summer league's going. And, you know, our vision is if kids are not in the NBA summer league, we want the agent community and players fighting to get in the, to get their clients in the global basketball summer league. And, you know, our main thing is to get a major sponsor and be the event outside the NBA Summer League that everybody frequents on an annual basis.
Now, Daryl, educate us here on this because, I mean, you're talking about European basketball, and in the United States, I believe there's a little bit of naivete, if you will, as far as we teach our kids and our athletes to that the next level is the NBA. Give us an idea on what the pay structure is like in Europe or overseas, and is it something that our players can or the athletes can earn an honest living with, and why isn't it talked about more?
Yeah, it's a very unique system they have in this international basketball in Europe, everywhere. I mean, the pay is basically the American players are treated as expatriates, and there's a variety of different levels. You know, we have a term we call the entry-level market. It could be mostly in Europe, but it could be in South America where kids will pick up checks less at the low end, $1,500 to $2,000 per month, anywhere to $4,000 or $5,000. So we can say that's the entry-level market. Countries like Austria, England, Norway, Sweden, Finland, let me see, Latvia, Austria, you know, these are all considered like entry-level markets. But, I mean, kids make $2,000 to $4,000 tax-free. The teams provide them with an apartment, transportation, a car. Some teams will throw them a meal or two meals a day. And, I mean, kids really don't have to spend any money on anything except for food. And nowadays, phone calls are internet-based. All the kids have Skype or they have some type of application. The teams provide you with the internet, your apartment have, you know, a television, stereo, washer, dryer. So, I mean, you just literally have to go to practice a couple times a day and play your game. So it's an opportunity for kids to save. It's tax-free. So if you're making $3,000 tax-free, that's like being in the United States, probably making close to $6,000 a month. So it's not a bad opportunity, and the kids get the opportunity to, you know, to see the world and play basketball and get paid. So that's the entry-level market. And obviously, they fly the kids back and forth to give them insurance. So it's not a bad deal. Then you have the mid-level market. You got guys making anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 a month. They probably have better contracts, better cars, better apartments, better leagues, more flights in their ticket, but really the same type of situation. So imagine you're making 10 grand a month, you're playing in Germany, you're playing on television, you're traveling pretty first class. That's not a bad situation. 10 grand tax-free. You know, they're probably put 3 or 4 airline tickets in your contract so your girlfriend could come over, your parents could come over. And, you know, you definitely have your own car, you have your apartment, and you get bonuses for game wins. You get bonuses for, you know, finishing in the cup. So the higher levels you progress in the overseas market, you get better contracts. Then you have markets like the high level. You got guys playing, you know, 100,000 a year all the way up to 2 million euros a year in some of the top leagues in Europe. And some guys can make more money in the overseas market than they would in the NBA. You figure, like a kid who was get like a minimum wage salary in the NBA, like 600,000. You remember, you're getting taxed in the United States. So by the time he pays the tax and he, you know, pays for his apartment, and guys get caught up in that luxury lifestyle trying to be like all the other NBA players, how much are they really taking home? So the same player, if he goes to Europe, maybe he gets a contract for 800,000 tax-free. So he's actually making a lot more money. And he's playing a lot more. So, yeah. I mean, in the leagues, the top level leagues in the United States, I mean, in Europe are really, really interesting. You know, it's high level. A lot of the guys could play in the NBA, and you've got some outstanding international players, you know, that can pay a lot of money, and they're real pros. And you know, the game's a little bit different. It's based off of a lot of ball movement, kind of like how the San Antonio Spurs play. They play a very European-style game, and it was, you know, them winning was kind of great for basketball because it promoted the, you know, the key of playing team basketball, which, you know, in the United States and NBA, we kind of focus on the athletes and athleticism, and, you know, the San Antonio Spurs kind of showed us a different blueprint, I guess.
Daryl Reshaw, Executive Director at GlobalBasketball.com. We appreciate your time, your insight. Thanks for staying up late, and best of luck at the Global Basketball Summer League in Las Vegas.
Okay, I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Daryl. Have a good one.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
There goes Daryl Reshaw. GlobalBasketball.com, big, huge European basketball tournament coming up in Las Vegas. That is the second week of July. You can go to globalbasketball.com to check the information for that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will have guest number two, Paul Silvey from King 5 Sports. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pains went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. We are going right to the phone lines with guest number two from King 5 Sports, Mr. Paul Silvey. Paul, how you doing today?
Good. How you doing, Sean?
Great, man. Great. I know that some great things are happening up there in the world of sports. One being the Seattle Mariners, man, winners of 6 of 8, and they're moving right along. I know that they had lost. Goodness, what was it? 5 in a row before they won the 6 out of the past 8. How are things going up there in Seattle? How are the fans taking it?
You know, these fans are just dying for the Mariners to win. Before the Seahawks got hot, you know, this was a Mariners town, man. It's a baseball town, and they are starving for these guys to play some good baseball, and they're getting there. I mean, you know, let's face it, they ran into a Kansas City Royals team that was rolling. You know, they had won 10 in a row, and they went into KC over the weekend and took them out, you know, 3 straight. So that's impressive. But the problem with this team is that they're just inconsistent. You know, they're still young. A lot of people don't realize just how young they are. And they got to get some consistency going and stop losing 8 and winning 3 and then losing 5 and winning 3. I mean, they got to figure out how to you know, just keep it smooth and steady. So they'll get there. I mean, you know, Lloyd, there's just a different vibe with Lloyd McClendon at the helm, I think.
Yeah, and so mentioning Lloyd, I mean, you know, this is his chance to actually shine. He's doing just that with the team. Right now, I believe they're in a 3-way tie as we speak for the wild card spot with Baltimore and New York. All it takes is, you know, before the trade deadline is, you know, one positive, strong trade for the Mariners, and, you know, they could be in definite contention going here into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we seem to think, you know, all the time, is that when they get to this point, you want them, you know, they're always looking for a bat, they're always looking for some offense, and you want them to pull the trigger. But you know what? Usually by mid-July, they're out of it anyway, and why waste your money? But now, it's kind of cool. Here we are getting into late June, and, you know, these guys, like you said, they're in that wild card talk. And you know, the one thing I caution fans about is, they've been in that wild card talk before with Eric Wedge, you know, around that All-Star break. And then right after the break, they just tanked. And, you know, yeah. It just kind of takes the wind out of the sails. But yeah, if they're in the hunt, man, after that All-Star break, you know, go spend some money on a bat. It would be just a matter of who's available.
Yeah, now you're mentioning with Eric Wedge, and of course the last time the Mariners had 40 wins this early, I believe, was back in 2007. I mean, that's, a little while back. But you're talking about bats, Paul, and you know, I'm thinking of the pitching staff. You know, you have, you know, King Felix, and you have Iwakama and Chris Young, who's the surprise, along with Elias. You know, I can't help but think that they might need a mid reliever at some point. I mean, they have a great closer in Fernando Rodney, but what do you think about grabbing maybe a middle reliever at some point?
Well, they've always been pretty happy with their bullpen. I mean, and Lloyd doesn't, you know, he puts guys out there that match up well against the hitters, and you saw it over the weekend, man. He'll let these guys throw to one guy, and that's it. You know, if he gets the guy out and they bring up a righty, then he's going to go to the pen and get the guy that matches up best against him. So it doesn't matter, you know, how well the guy is pitching at the time. He's trying to play matchups. So I'm kind of like the way their staff is right now, and they've got, well, let's face it, look at their bullpen, man. A lot of those guys are virtual unknowns, and I don't trust Tom Wilhelmsen as far as I can throw him. I just don't. I mean, and Furbush is a guy who can go off the rails here and there, but, you know, of late, give them all credit. You know, they've had enough rest. They're not getting worn out. The starters are helping them out, so yeah, I mean, there's been some nice surprises on that pitching staff. And, you know, up until just a few days ago, you know, they had the 5th-best ERA in all of Major League Baseball. So so I think they're okay. And people tend to forget that, you know, they got the two studs down there in Taijuan Walker and the big lefty. His name escapes me right now.
Paxton.
But Paxton, yeah, exactly. Those are the two guys that, you know, they just got to get. You know, they got to get those guys healthy and get them up here because I think those two guys, man, when they get in the flow and they can start pitching on a regular basis without getting hurt, boy, this just really going to be a huge improvement to a staff that's already pretty solid.
It's the voice of Paul Silvey, sports director at King 5 in Seattle, Washington. Paul, there was a huge soccer match yesterday for the United States, and they were so close to a victory over Portugal. Your take on the 2-2 draw?
Man, it was heartbreaking. I mean, I am a huge soccer fan, and I watch World Cup. I record the games. I'll watch them when I go home. Sometimes I don't like working in this business when World Cup's on, because I have to go and report the highlights and show them. So if I don't get a chance to see the game, all I'm going to show you is 35 seconds of these games, and I really want to watch the 2 hours. And I know there's a lot of people out there going, this guy's a nut for wanting to watch soccer for that long. But, you know, when they went down to that final seconds yesterday, and they scored, I'm like, I can't believe it. You know, like 20 seconds left. That was tough. But you knew the way the announcers were talking about it, like it was over. And then Cristiano Ronaldo, arguably the best soccer player on the planet, has the ball on his feet, perfect cross. You know, it's just one of those things, man. But it's so cool that people are talking about not only soccer in this country, but U.S. soccer. It's just a refreshing deal, and I can't speak highly enough about soccer, man. I just love World Cup.
Paul, do you think that the U.S. has any advantage with German Jurgen Klinsmann as their coach?
No, I don't think. You know, I think so much has changed, but Klinsmann is he brings his own style to this team, and he has seemed to pull the right punches and insert the right substitutes during these matches. So he seems to have a good feel for the talent that he has and the weaknesses that he needs to cover. Going against Germany, they're rock solid, and that matchup it's just every World Cup that comes around, it seems like the U.S. is ready for matchups like this. So I like the way they match up. I'm bummed I'm going to miss that. I'm going to actually be on a flight that morning during the entire match, and so I'm not going to hear it. I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to do anything till I land, and I'm going to find out who won. And that's killing me. But but anyway, I think they're going to match up well, but you can see in these games, you can see that all it takes in this heat and humidity down there is one mental breakdown or one physical breakdown. Somebody takes a play off, like they say in football. Somebody takes 10 seconds off on defense. It opens a gap, and that's all it takes, because these are the world's best soccer players, and they'll burn you. So these guys have to play the full 90 and just stay geared up and focused despite the heat and humidity.
Paul Silvey on the double. And Paul, yeah, you've hit it right on the head. I mean, these are the best of the best in the world. And, you know, of course, there's Seattle Sounders soccer up in Seattle. And, of course, there's a team down here in Sacramento as we speak, the Sacramento Republic, that's on the rise and growing. But there's a stark difference in what you watch, you know, with the MLS and what we're watching now. You know, do you see the MLS? I know Sean Wally and myself talked about this earlier. Do you see the leagues in America growing and becoming better to where they can catch up to this world-class caliber?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there is absolute improvement in MLS. I mean, I remember watching last time around in 2010, I'd watch a World Cup, and I'm like, man, look at the difference in the soccer at this level. And then you go back to Major League Soccer, and you're like, man, all they do is kick and run, and there's a lot of mistakes. But, boy, 4 years has made quite a bit of difference. You know, I'm watching these games now, and I'm looking. I'm like, you know, this is a little bit like watching some good Major League Soccer. And because, I'm not seeing the stark contrast that used to be 4 or 5 years ago. No, Major League Soccer is improving. They're getting the designated players in here, these DPs that they're paying a lot of money to, so they're giving this influx of talent. Clint Dempsey's a prime example of that. So it's just one of those things where they're bringing in some of these top European players, even if they're at the tail end of their careers. When they're coming to MLS, they're bringing more than just their name and their skill. They're bringing their leadership and the talent that they can help teach these guys and coach these guys they're playing with into a different brand of soccer, a higher level brand of soccer. So I think you've seen, I think, marked improvement in Major League Soccer over the last 5 years, and I think it's going to continue to get that way, because let's face it, man, soccer, youth soccer in this country is huge. I mean,
very huge.
More
very
kids
huge.
Are, Yeah, exactly. So I mean, more kids are playing it in the state of Washington than any other youth sport. So it's just the more those guys play and the more they get better and better at that teenage level and that 20-year-old level, that's the feeder system for U.S. soccer. So you're going to see a lot more talent, a lot better soccer being played in MLS.
Well, yeah, you know, I believe you're definitely right. You know, we're seeing it as we speak, and, you know, it can only get better from here. Shifting gears from European world football to American football, man, some great things going on in mini training camp up in Renton. Some fisticuffs, if you will, Paul, between some of the players in Seattle. Man, kind of give us an insight on what the Seahawks are going through. They're chomping at the bit already, ready to defend the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it seems that way, that, you know, there's always this concern that these guys won't have that hunger, and a lot of teams lose that hunger once they get satisfied and they win a Super Bowl. They kind of just fall off the pace a little bit. But there were some huge contracts handed out in the offseason to these guys. The egos got inflated. And, you know, now it's kind of like, you know, it's good to see Richard Sherman just rise up and say, you know what, I don't care if I got my $40 million guaranteed. You're still in my house, and I'm still going to smack you around. And I like the young guys saying, hey, you know, I don't care if you have a $40 million contract. I'm still coming over the middle, or I'm still going to take you one-on-one. I'm not afraid of you. So there's this great, you know, feel over there between the coaches and the players that they really can't wait to get started in July. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, some of the best players in the NFL are right here with the Seattle Seahawks. And there's a lot to look forward to. But as far as the scraps and all that stuff, that's just a good sign. I mean, let's face it, it happens in a lot of NFL camps. And there'll be a lot more of it when come July and August around the country and all the different camps. But I like the way this team sets up. I think that their best opportunity to win another Super Bowl is this season. I mean, this team is still pretty much intact, and they've got all their key players back. I mean, this is still a solid time. If you're ever going to bank on these guys winning it again, this is the year. So it's going to be interesting.
Paul, did team owner Paul Allen deliver you your Super Bowl ring?
No, but I'll tell you what, man. It cracks me up how many people in that organization get a ring. I mean, I'm talking to some broadcasters, and I get a text saying, hey, I just got some good news. I'm getting a ring. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're getting a ring? I mean, it's just, I don't understand the you know, who in that building gets rings. And, you know, maybe they're making some people pay a stipend to pick up their part of the ring. I don't know, but it is amazing to me how many non-factors get rings.
Amazing.
As much as you like working out, you could definitely put down the barbells and just curl that ring a few times.
Man, Damon Heward brought his couple. He has a couple of rings for the Patriots, and he has them tucked away in a safe deposit box. But once in a while, he'll come on and he'll bring those rings, and he let me, you know, he pulled them out and let me put them on my fingers, and I'm like, hey. They are. They're like little balls of lead, basically, and they're super heavy. They're just gaudy and huge. And like he said, he would never wear them out. Like, what are you going to do with those things? The only time you ever really break them out is if you're in broadcasting and the playoffs. Are, you know, like Mike Ditka will break his out. You'll see these guys break out their big rings and their big hardware during the broadcast. But no, I mean, a guy like Damon Heward, no, he's just going to tuck them away.
Now, Paul, I'm not great at math, but I was doing some recently, and I believe you're getting close to 25 years in Seattle. Is that correct?
Well, 25 years total in this business. This September would be 21 years in Seattle. So, yeah, you're close.
I had the overall number, man. Could you have imagined 21 years ago that you'd still be the man and doing this for this long and everything you've been through here in Seattle?
No, I really couldn't. I mean, I'm a Midwest guy. I came from a market outside Detroit. My goal was always to be in Detroit, and it never happened for me. And fortunately, something opened in Seattle, and it happened to be the best station in Seattle. It just things just fell into place for me, and I would never have imagined I'd be here for 20 years. No way. I thought for sure I would be going to some, you know, like a Chicago or Detroit, some kind of Midwest, you know, blue-collar sports town, and covering hockey and things I like, you know, sports I love. And then all of a sudden, this town, over the years, became a great sports town. It really did. I mean, there's always for a while there, it seemed like there was always something going on, whether it was negative or positive. There was always something happening in this town, and you're like, geez, what else could happen in this town? Coaches getting fired, big contracts being tossed out, big players leaving town. Everything was happening in Seattle. So it has really become a pretty solid sports town in its own right.
Well, Paul, definitely, you know, you being in Seattle, you have taken like a fish to water, if you will, and you're mentioning coming from Michigan. Of course, you're at the ABC affiliate in Flint. But since coming here, coming to the Pacific Northwest, man, I believe right now you're doing Northwest Sports along with King 5. There's some other things that you're doing, you know, with Sylvie Trainer, Trainer 360 Sports. And tell us a little bit about SylvieSports.com. Man,
you're
going to
let me promote that, huh? You know what? I've been working on that project for a long time. I mean, I had an idea when my kids were younger, and now they're all grown and pretty much gone, and I don't and it's unfortunate that they don't get to use it as a device in the backyard. But I always wanted to develop one sports product, one sports trainer that you could put in the backyard that featured a lot of play value in a lot of different sports, that whether it was lacrosse, soccer, baseball, basketball even. And I think I came up with something pretty cool. My partner and I, Dave Chamberlain, we've got this thing getting some traction, and we're getting some great feedback. So it's just really cool to, you know, I've always been a big fan of kids in sports, and it's just really cool to give parents and kids something that's solid, and the parents always have, you know, there's always a couple of kids in the family that are playing different sports, and this thing plays to those type of families where you got a kid playing lacrosse, we got you covered. You got a baseball kid, got you covered. It's just kind of cool that they don't have to spend a lot of dough to put a solid piece of sports equipment in their backyard and never have to worry about it. So I appreciate it. Let me plug it. I mean, it's a Sylvie Trainer 360, and it's going to be out there on Amazon.com sometime in the next year, I guarantee you.
And Paul, one of the other things that I really enjoy, you know, growing up and getting the chance to watch some of the things that you've done with King 5 Sports is your passion, man. There's a lot of passion that you bring. You know, I enjoyed your bit as far as, you know, talking about the arena issue when, you know, with Seattle and the Sonics possibly coming back. You know, I've also enjoyed, you know, you backing Richard Sherman when it just seemed like, you know, at that time when, you know, after the Super Bowl to where, you know, people, or after the NFC Championship game that we were all there, I'm sorry, that, you know, everybody outside of Seattle wanted to jump on Richard Sherman, and you went to bat, man. And I appreciate that passion. I appreciate that zeal that you bring, that fire. And the Pacific Northwest is definitely fortunate for having you as a sports broadcaster up there.
Oh, man, I really appreciate that. That's great to hear, especially from some guys that are in the business, because you know, as you know, it's easy to sit up there and just be a homer, and I just try to just call it like it is, man. I'll even make fun of myself, because you know what, nobody's perfect, and hey, I'm getting older, so it's like I'm gonna make some mistakes, but when I see somebody make mistakes and things like that, you know, why not call it out? People at home are not, they're smart viewers. Sports fans are just smart. They can see when you're trying to blow smoke, and they know when you're full of BS. And it's just important for them to know that when they see you, you're going to call it like it is and call it straight. So I try to – I'm not saying I do it 100% of the time, but I try to do it most of the time out there to let people know that, you know, that what they're getting from me is a little bit more real than maybe some of the other guys and the cookie-cutter guys across the country.
Paul Sylvie, King 5 Sports Director in Seattle, king5.com, NWCN.com, and of course, sylviesports.com. Thank you so much for your time and your insight. Say hi to my buddy Tony White. Say hi to Chris Egan, and we will see you down the road, most likely at a Seahawks game, sir.
All right. Thank you, fellas. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks again, Paul.
Paul Sylvie, jack of all trades, everything sports, in and around Seattle, and heck, now with the World Cup all over the globe.
Man, you know, when we talk with Paul, I mean, you know, even when we were talking with him at the NFC Championship game, you can tell that, you know, like he was saying, he's a no-nonsense type of a person. He tells it like it is. And, man, I really get a kick out of talking to Paul and just hearing his point of view. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's an athlete at Bowling Green, and you know, he's not just one of these guys that just opens up a book and talks sports. He lived it. And so, you know, man, hats off to him and the long tenure. What did you say, Sean? You said 20 plus years. Is that how long it's been?
21 years he's been in Seattle, 25 in the business total.
Man, that is awesome longevity. And you know, never a dull moment when Paul takes to the broadcasting. And so, man, hats off to him and awesome guest on our show.
And I can tell you firsthand, you know, the time I spent with him when I was an intern with him and his sports department way back when. You know, he's a great guy. He's a very funny guy. I mean, he could be a comedian if he wasn't involved in sports broadcasting. And he knows his stuff, and that's why he's been in Seattle so long.
Yeah, you know, and again, I mean, you know, the Pacific Northwest is better for having sports anchors like Paul Sylvie, man. And so, again, hats off to a job well done and wishing many more years of success for him.
Well, Sean, show 58. It's been another good one. We've had two great guests as usual here on the double. First one being Daryl Reshaw, the executive director of globalbasketball.com, who told us things, the ins and outs about basketball around the world and what he's experienced in playing overseas and now running a sports marketing campaign and business.
Man, you know, with Daryl, you're talking about somebody who had a vision and had a dream as far as, you know, his marketing prowess and having a game plan after basketball. That's something that's big for athletes. Most of the time with most of the athletes, they wind up getting their big purse or their big salary. And then after they're done, you know, it's kind of skittish. But, you know, you could tell with Daryl, he really knew what he wanted to do and took his business globally. And now that he's established himself around Europe and around the world, spending time over there in 20 years, coming back to the United States and establishing that brand here, that is great business. And man, what an awesome guest and Daryl Reshaw. And so I wish him the best as well on, you know, his endeavors moving forward. Also, you know, our second guest, you know, of course, we had just talked about Paul Sylvie, you know, and, you know, nothing but great things to say about Paul and, you know, his insight. We asked him about all things Pacific Northwest, and we even touched a little bit on the World Cup soccer, which, you know, I didn't know that Paul had that strong passion, you know, as far as that zeal of watching soccer. And so, you know, two great guests and Daryl Reshaw and Paul Sylvie. And, you know, we look forward to some great guests coming again next week. So that's going to wrap it up for show number 58 for us, for Sean Wally. I'm Sean Boyd. Don Newsom, our engineer. Alicia Flores, our producer. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the...